Most video games have a somewhat similar story or plot points, but somebody made something very different on the PS2 with Katamari Damacy, because with that one, the story is about a king that destroyed the stars, Ryan. Keith, the stars were gone. And it is up to a prince to rebuild the stars, rebuild cosmos by rolling up dogs, cats, sheep, entire villages into a ball. Yes, this is an actual video game that came out in 2004, and it actually got an HD remaster on the Nintendo Switch, so we figured, hey, it's such a weird game, why not talk about it on another exciting episode of A Cast to the Past. You can check out a brand new episode of our podcast each and every Sunday, where we talk about the weird games just like this one, but we're also not afraid to delve into the more traditional things like Grand Theft Auto 3, the Super Mario Brothers movie. Yes, we've actually talked about that, and sometimes we go into the more real route. Recently, we reviewed Office Space, so if you have a case of the Mondays, we can actually join you in that ride. And my name is Juan Velez. I am from Puerto Rico, and joining me as always, first of all, from Boston, Massachusetts, we have Ryan McNulty. Now, Ryan, when talking about this game, I think that one of the biggest things that is just so weird about it, more so than the story, is the visual, the art style. What did you think about it when you first saw it?
In some ways, it did kind of remind me of almost like Wind Waker, with kind of the cartoon cel-shaded type of look to it. But then the characters are almost kind of Minecraft-like, where they're really blocky and stuff. But then the aliens almost look like something out of, like, Hey Arnold with the football-shaped head, you know?
So, oh my god,
or they got,
I
like,
never
a
made
yoga
that
mat
comparison.
For a head or something like that.
Wow.
So a lot of converging visuals in this game.
So the other person that we have here is from London, Ontario, Keith Poshik. Keith.
Hello.
What would you categorize this in terms of a genre? Because usually it's really easy to look at a game and be like platformer, adventure. How would you present this to somebody that's never seen it or heard about it?
I guess I would go with puzzle game, where it's a puzzle of how you can get things on your ball and what you need to roll up in said ball to make you complete the level. I don't know. Katamari kind of lives outside of the realm of genres, really, where it's a hard descriptor, where it's kind of a puzzle game, it's kind of an action game, and it's kind of like a feel-good zen-like game. It's an interesting little experiment.
I think it's about being satisfied, because if you guys browse Reddit, there's
balls
always
do
these
satisfy.
Threads. Okay, so usually in Reddit, there's all these things that people love about, you know, cutting things in a specific way, or with ASMR, you have people with sound, but I think there's something about just rolling stuff into a ball, and eventually knowing that, hey, you see this entire town, guess what, eventually, all of it can be rolled up into the ball, and I think that is like the main thing about the game. It's just so satisfying. But when did you guys first hear about Katamari Damacy? Was it recently? Was it back when it first came out?
I heard about Katamari back in the PS2. I had never played it until recently, but it was this weird thing. Like, you know how sometimes you hear about crazy Japanese games that you need to import to see for yourself because this is just like nothing you've ever seen before. Katamari was one of them for me, another one being Yakuza 2, but just the zeitgeist around this game on like early message boards and forms of this strange thing that nobody really knows what you're supposed to do in it, but it's just fun enough that you can go do it and still have a great time, and the music is amazing while you're doing it. A very very culty feel to Katamari. Even though I never touched it until recently, it's always had my attention.
Yeah, I remember being familiar with it when it came out, and hearing about the concept and everything, but I never actually played it. I also remember Mega 64 did one of their videos with Katamari. So some guy actually dressed up and had a ball right. and was trying to like that's roll amazing. Things up. So that's probably one of the first times I was familiar with it.
Completely forgot about that. And remember that this game came out in 2004. Now, we have a list of five games here. And when you think about Katamari Damacy, so for those listening to the podcast, please look up a screenshot or something of the game, because it is unlike almost anything else we had ever seen in that generation. Because maybe you got something like Beautiful Joe, which was a cel-shaded game, but even that one had a lot more detail. And it had style. This game, dare I say, purposely almost looked bad. I think it was just meant to look ugly, and that was kind of the appeal. But Ryan, if you could list out the five games that we have here, just to remember, these all came out in the same year as Katamari Damacy.
So some 2004 releases of note: Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, Half-Life 2, Tony Hawk's Underground 2, Halo 2, a lot of twos,
yeah.
Metal Gear Solid 3, Snake Eater, terrible game. No, I'm just saying that to trigger Keith. I've never played it.
Them's fighting words I there, son.
So within those five games, which one would you say is something that when you think about 2004, you're like, that is a game that exemplifies or is like the definition of 2004 packed into one specific game?
I will even take that a step further and say Metal Gear Solid 3, in my opinion, is the pinnacle of that generation of console. Not only of 2004, but of the PlayStation 2, MGS3 is the pinnacle of that piece of technology.
You just wanted to say pinnacle, didn't you?
I did. It was a buzzword that I had in my head. Yeah. I don't know if you noticed this, but I'm a big fan of buzzwords. So right now, pinnacle was that one. And, you know, MGS3 is just such a great pinnacle that I had to use the word pinnacle.
So people, if you want to be up to date on the cool and hip words, just listen to this podcast and Keith will fill you in. What about you, Ryan, with this list?
You know, I think the most synergistic game of 2004, you know, it just created a lot of synergy of that year.
We'll talk about it in our webinar next.
Yeah. You know, a lot of great workflow. Grand Theft Auto San Andreas for me, that was like the game I was spending a lot of time on in 2004. So that would be my pick.
Same here. I think that San Andreas was a game that I never beat, but it was just so fun to go into because you could have a six-pack while still being out of shape, and that to me was just, scientifically speaking, I don't know how that was possible, but the game was it. I do think it's interesting that I guarantee you a lot of people listening to this episode are going to be surprised that none of the three of us mentioned Halo 2. So I know we're going to be talking about Katamari Damacy, but I think it's also important to take advantage of this because I don't know when we're going to talk about Halo 2, if ever, but in this generation, was the original Xbox, because you can't say Xbox One anymore, was the original Xbox important for you? Was it something that you had or cared about?
I owned it, and I played some games on it, but not a bunch, and I had Halo 2, and I had the original Halo. I really liked the campaign of the original Halo, and then never finished the campaign of Halo 2. I just kind of lost interest, but I played a lot of games that were on kind of all systems, like Max Payne and stuff on Xbox, so I wasn't like fully into the whole Xbox world. I just kind of played some games on it.
And I never owned an Xbox, so it was never really important to me. Halo was a thing that I would go to my friend's house and have a LAN party back when those were a thing, and then do the split-screen multiplayer, Halo multiplayer matches, but never really touched the campaign until later on the PC. But that was my limited Halo experience. And beyond that, the original Xbox, almost at Xbox One, is just a giant hole in my gaming knowledge because I never owned it. Beyond Halo, there wasn't really anything that really stood out to me as an exclusive, so I just never really bothered owning one. Even going back, I've never owned an original Xbox.
And talking about Xbox, the first Katamari game that actually came out for it happened in 2007 with a Beautiful Katamari, which came out in the Xbox 360. So remember, we're going to be talking about Katamari Damacy which even though we played the Switch version, that's the one that we all played, right? Like the yep. remaster?
Yes.
It is the exact same game as the original one. As far as I know, there are no changes. You even need to manually save. Remember when that was a thing in video games?
Yeah, I got burned by that real hard.
Oh,
remembering,
really?
Oh, yeah, you need to manually save. Because I was on a roll, no pun intended. Finished like 4 or 5 levels. Turned off my Switch without saving. I should have put it on the charger because my battery died overnight. And then I wake up and all of a sudden those levels aren't done anymore.
Did you get a lot of progress?
I had about 4 or 5 levels under my belt that I had to go and redo, so that's a significant chunk of the game, and learned my lesson real good-like.
So this game is actually pretty simple. So I tried to mention what the story is, because it's just insane. Like, yeah, it is about the stars being gone, and constellations, and things like that, and then your job is to literally just go to planet Earth and other places, and roll up things into a ball, and that is it. The game is nothing else, right? So it is the most bare bones. I think it's like modern days. It's the perfect game to play when you're listening to something like a podcast or something. Because you know what it is, right? It's like, well, I got to roll the ball and it's telling me it's got to be up to this size. And that's pretty much it. Now, with what Keith mentioned, the challenge in the game is that as the levels progress, not only does the difficulty scale, but the length of time in each stage is actually pretty substantial, like towards the end of the game. And I want to start off the question with actually this is like, you get stages that are like almost 30 minutes long, like 20 minutes. So if you fail a 20 minute stage, this isn't like 20 minutes, you know, in game time. No, this is like real life 20 minutes. And if you fail, you got to try it all over again. So what did you guys think of the difficulty in the game, considering it's like a ridiculous thing yet? It's pretty challenging.
I honestly didn't mind it because I didn't find the actual difficulty of the game to be all that challenging. I think beyond one of the challenges that I'll get into my gripes with later, I didn't find the requirements that hard to meet. It was a little bit stressful at the beginning once you're like building up your small Katamari and I'm not able to hit everything, but every level kind of had a point that you are over a hump and now you can just roll pretty much over anything and quickly get those last few meters or centimeters that you need. So the time frame didn't feel very challenging or very significant to me, but it was kind of cool and kind of different to be like, okay, I need to sit down here for 12 minutes. And if I screw up, then that means I just lost 12 minutes. And there's no fast retry button either. If you fail, you have to go back to the menu, you have to reselect that mission again, you have to see the opening cutscene, skip through it all, and go in again. So it gives you a lot of incentive not to screw around, and the game has a nice difficulty with it that if you keep on track, if you don't do something stupid, you will succeed. And I think it's a really nice balance, honestly.
I felt they were pretty generous with the timing. I think there was only maybe a couple instances where I did have to start over, one of which was the last level, which did hurt a little bit because I was so close.
That does
but
suck.
A lot of these do feel like insurmountable at times, but this game is essentially the snowball effect, right? Once you once like the higher you are up in the like meters of the size of the ball, the faster it accumulates. Once you get to like 3 meters, all of a sudden it's really faster to get to 5 meters and et cetera, et cetera. Because you're just able to pick up so many more things. But yeah, it did suck to get so very far. But once you kind of screw up once, you start to really know the path you need to take to like find the most items that are the appropriate size for where you are. Like, you start to kind of figure that out.
So that's actually the next part, in that each stage, the ball does vary in size. Some of them, you start out with a microscopically small ball, right? So you're getting literally like candy, like just tiny things, and eventually like rats are bigger than you. But other stages, you do get balls that are a little bit bigger, so those things become a little bit easier. Did you find in the stages that it would be better to finish everything in one area, like trying to roll everything that you could there? Or would you try to figure out, like, I'm just going around the map, try to get all the smaller stuff, and then I'm just going to go just sort of around and around until I eventually get the job done.
Yeah, that second one was my strategy. You find what you can roll up, and then you're willing to cut your losses, and then most times you can go back and just kind of steamroll those earlier parts and just quickly accumulate your ball to a point where you easily hit the goal.
I would say it's kind of a combination of both. I'd try and get everything I could in the given area, but I would, because, you know, if I was trying it again for a second time, I would sort of know everything I could get in that one area and then just go exploring the other areas to pick up some of the smaller, you pick up like the low-hanging fruit, if you will, at the beginning to really just kind of get a decent
sometimes,
size.
Sometimes, literally.
Yes.
Yeah. For me, like, I didn't fail a lot when you mentioned the difficulty thing, Keith, but my challenge was that my initial thing was, well, if I spawn in this area, I must be able to get everything in this area, right? But then I realized, like, the ball wasn't getting rolled up. It wasn't becoming big enough. And that's when I realized, like, okay, so you want to think big. Like, you don't want to just grab a bunch of small things. Like, for me, my strategy was, I want to get more of the specifically largest, bigger things I can get at that moment.
Yeah.
And then eventually, like, the small things, like you mentioned, Keith, you won't even tell you're rolling them, because you'll be so big. But like, whenever I could roll up a fence, that was my indication of like, oh yeah, here
now
we go.
Fences were good. Now fences were clutch. They really helped like get the size real quick. So
the game does do a very good job of letting you know approximately where you need to be by gating off certain areas of the map by size. Like in one of the earlier levels, you're gated off by like 10 centimeters where you can't go to this area. You can't roll up these pylons that are blocking you till you're about 10 centimeters big. So at that point, you know, like, okay, I'm supposed to be over there now. I assume there's bigger things for me over there that I can go roll up, get bigger and come back and then get the stuff that I missed. So it's very good at kind of keeping you on the same pace without directly telling you need to go here now.
So Ryan, in your case, I know the going into this game, the one complaint mm-hmm. everybody has is not the game itself or the mechanics, but rather the control layout. Because usually, say you're playing a first-person shooter, you move with the left analog stick and then you look around with the right one. What's different about this game, Ryan?
At this point, in this day and age, there's a lot of those like twin stick type of games where you're moving around with the left and the right joysticks, and one kind of controls your direction, the other one kind of controls like forward, backward. And this game doesn't necessarily adhere to that, whereas like it's more like your left and your right hand, so you kind of move them like one up, the other one down to start to turn one way, or one down, the other one up to turn the other way. And then you like double click them to like turn and face the other way. So it can create, it took a while to get used to. I felt like the world was always behind me for so long, where it's like,
yeah,
I'd always be like going into a wall and I'd be like struggling to turn around. And I felt like everything I needed was behind me. And once I learned the double
jump.
Well, no, once I learned the double stick tap to go to the other to flip
that
over
was
the other
game
way.
Changer.
Yeah, that was really the game changer, because you feel like you rush through something really quick and most of the map is always behind you. So to learn to turn and to instant quick turn was big. I still never felt 100% comfortable with it, but I definitely got a lot better with it.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you there, where I felt like I was able to get a handle on the controls of how to roll the ball and get it to go where I needed to go. But for me, it was the camera that, even as we're talking about it now, I still haven't mastered or even come close to be able to figure out how to manipulate the camera in a way that the camera's always showing me where I want to go or where I need to position the camera. And I don't know if that's by design or not, but it was definitely one of the things that irked me the most while playing it, where I just wanted to go a certain way. And even sometimes when I would use the double click of the thumbsticks to switch over and try and go in an opposite direction, the place that I wanted to go was to my left. So no matter how many times I flipped over, I wouldn't be able to manipulate the camera in a way that I could just easily go left. I'd have to either like slow down, kind of turn around and then go that way, or just try to roll to my left and hope to God I don't hit anything that's going to destroy my Katamari.
I know it's going to be a weird example, but something like Dark Souls, it takes elements of games that are usually pretty simple, but the movement of your character is very much the main thing about the game, right? It's how you understand that. You know, any other game like Assassin's Creed, you move forward and he'll climb stuff. But Dark Souls makes sure that every little step is something that you have to master. And I feel like this is somewhat similar here where, yeah, ideally, they could have done a layout which is like the traditional, you know, move with the left and aim with the right. Do you think that would have taken away the experience, even though it is challenging? Yeah, it makes it a little bit more annoying, but is that part of the charm?
I feel like the game might be too easy if they had the more simplistic controls, because I think part of it was struggling with the controls that made it difficult and kind of navigating the world. If you just had it as the simple, general stick controls and you could go anywhere you needed to be, I feel like this game's already not super difficult, so it'd be even like a cakewalk, so the controls kind of add to the challenge.
That's a good point. And yeah, maybe it would make the game a little too easy if you could just manipulate the ball in the way that you needed to.
And I'd say the other thing is, going back to the list of games that came out in 2004, you look at games like Half-Life 2, even Tony Hawk, because like Tony Hawk's Underground 2 is not as simple as the other ones, right? Like you could get off the board. Like, it was a lot of game in one thing. Yet you look at this game and it is so simple. Like this, the first stage and the last stage of Katamari Damacy are pretty much the exact same thing. It becomes bigger in scale, but you're literally doing nothing different than you were at the beginning of the game. You're not getting a different ball. Yeah, the size is different, but the mechanics is the same. Is that a bad thing? Or do you think it's nice to have a game that doesn't try to be more than what it is?
That's what I was going to say is probably my biggest problem with the game, is that it never evolves. It doesn't take that next step into like greatness, in my opinion, because you can look at a game like Portal, which you start off with just the concept of a puzzle game with two portals, but then it takes that next step of now you're escaping a facility and your environment is very different. It's not just these simple puzzles anymore. It's a totally different thing, and you realize the thing you were after is evil or whatever, the thing that was helping you. So it really does. And even in like Portal 2, when you're doing all these puzzles and then, oh, now we're introducing like the was it like the bouncy gel or whatever, the different thing, like the different paints that like reacted differently, they added new elements to the puzzles, where I was a little disappointed that, like you said, the first level is the exact same as the last level, just the scale is different. It is really cool by the end of the very last level, you're knocking over buildings and stuff, and that is cool to see, but you know, that should have been the midpoint of the game, and then let's pivot and change it up a little bit.
I disagree with that in the way that the scale of the game keeps it fresh, and I don't think that it needs to add anything like new mechanics to keep it interesting, because when you start out the game, you're happy when you can roll things up like erasers or vegetables in a garden. Like, that's the big point. And then as you go on through the mid-game, now you're starting to roll up things like animals and people, and eventually you get to things like buildings, and then by the end of the game, you're rolling up clouds and volcanoes and boats and crazy things like that. And it has a nice pace. It doesn't really keep on a size too long. You're always moving forward, with the exception of the challenges. You're always moving forward in scale, that these things that you thought were impossible to roll up early in the game all of a sudden become very obtainable.
So, a question for you guys. This game is a fairly short experience. According to howlongtobeat.com, you can complete it in anywhere between 4 to 5 hours. That's, you know, obviously depending if you don't mess up or not. Did you play it in bursts, as in, you know, one or two stages a day, or did you try to get through as much as you possibly could in one go?
I did about two or three stages a day, where that's in a way that the time limit did really work against it. Like, if a mission is 12 minutes and you beat it in 9, you still have to do all 12 minutes, and it becomes a game of how big my Katamari can get. So if you only have like a half hour to play, well, you are set in those specific times. You can't just rush through things. So I used that as an opportunity just to play in short bursts, and I think I enjoyed the game better because of that.
I did bursts as well. I probably played it over like 5 sessions where I played a few levels at a time and went through it that way, where that was the thing where I felt the game, I didn't feel the need, you know, I could only do it in small bursts because after a while I was kind of like, yeah, I'm kind of tired of this for now and I'll come back to it. I wasn't as motivated to keep marathoning it because I know most the levels are kind of like the same thing, just on a different scale.
Yeah, I think that was the same for me. I beat the game in about a week and a half, even though I had bought it a little while ago. I bought it over a month ago before we even decided to do it for the podcast, just because I wanted to get it. Because it is worth pointing out that if you want to get it for the Nintendo Switch, it's available digitally on the eShop, but you can actually get a physical copy like I did, but it's only available either at GameStop or Japan. So you can actually buy it on Amazon Japan or PlayAsia, which is where I got my copy from, because I prefer physical video games. That's just
Release
me.
Yourself from the chains of physical copies.
No!
Embrace your digital future.
Keith, this is what happened.
If you got friends, it's better.
Yeah,
so,
no, literally, that's what happened. Like, I had a
Keith's
friend.
Problem.
Yeah, that's a whole lot of my problem.
Yeah, like, in my case, dude, what happened is that I beat the game, and a friend that streams had watched one of my gameplay videos, and I was like, wait a minute, I have a physical copy. I can finish the game and actually lend it to the person, and I did. Because with PS4 and Xbox One, there are other ways of making that happen. But
you
I could just
be supporting developers and they can go buy their own copy.
Keith, you ever heard of word of mouth, buddy? That's how things work, because eventually if a new game comes out, because I think that's what they're going
Listen,
for.
Man, it's tough out there in this economy, all right? We can't all just be buying games all the time.
Yeah. I mean, hey, with today's model,
Sounds
eventually
like
everything is going to be subscription-based. So
yeah, I know.
Yeah,
God, help me.
Yeah, let's... Oh, this is
that's
a sad
another topic
part right
for
here.
Another day.
Yeah.
Yes.
All of
yes,
a sudden, we're all like, damn, yeah, that's pretty much it. But the other thing. So this game is uncomparable to almost anything else that we have usually played. Like maybe if you're a gamer that loves games from Japan or something, you look at this and it's like, what's different? Maybe it's a little bit more outrageous, but this to me was the first game that made it to North American markets that I looked at and went like, oh, so this is a brand new genre or category of games that I didn't even know existed. And even from the culture, I think Yakuza, you mentioned Keith, is the only other game that I can think of like, wow, that actually became popular here, yet despite the fact that it is totally not our culture. How did you guys factor that into your enjoyment of just like, this is something that you know, a publisher looked at and went like, that's not going to do well. We'll throw it out there, but we'll see how it does.
But this game just has so much charm. It has so much style that you can't look at it and be like, oh, this is ugly. This won't work. It's its own thing. It's so great. And if there's one thing that Katamari excels at beyond everything else, it is its look. It's its style, how everything blends together and is weird in a way that you're just kind of look at it like, what the hell is going on? How everybody talks in a record scratch plays into it. The weird kind of off-the-wall music that just seems to work so well in the game. Just everything melds together and how bright and colorful and fun it is, even though you're pretty much committing, like, homicide or genocide once you get to the point where you're rolling up people and just... You're basically rolling up people and throwing them into the sky,
you're
killing them and turning
children.
Them into the star.
Yeah, a lot
it's
of people
very,
had
very,
to die to get the sky back.
It's true, and it's such a dark concept that they make so fun, and it just, oh, it's so nice to look at, and it feels good.
That's
and
really
sounds
good.
Good.
That's a really good observation. Like, Ryan, think about this, that if you just change the tone of the game, this would go from a comedic, charming yeah. game to like the most horrifying experience
it's
on
like,
the PS2.
King, I have fixed the sky. What did it cost?
Everything.
Can somebody mod that? I don't know if a game came out on PC, but what did you think about that, Ryan? Do you think that the fact that the culture is so different from our own, that was appealing to you, or did that just not work?
I wouldn't necessarily call this game like culture, but I will say that this game, it's kind of, to me, it's like an average puzzle game that once you add the style, it's got style, it's got personality. When you wrap that all in, that's what makes it stand out, right? It's got charm up the wazoo, personality, everything. It all really works to add to that presentation. And I do really appreciate it. I mean, you look at the intro and that's what I picture. If Juan had an acid trip, that's what the intro is of this game. Like, yes. Once I saw the pandas, 100%. I'm like, this is Juan. Yep. No wonder Juan loves this game so much all that stuff. So it's just bursting with personality, and that's what makes it, that's what I think a lot of people adore about this game.
And there's a lot of Katamari because just to go down memory lane for a little bit. So this game came out in 2004, but then we got a couple of games after. In 2005, we got We Love Katamari for the PS2, which honestly, I didn't even know that came out. And we got Me and My Katamari on the PSP, which is interesting because with the PSP, there was only one thumbstick. So I don't remember or even know how that works, but whatever fix they must have done.
There's a, if you go into the Nintendo Switch version, there's a simple control option that programs everything to one thumbstick. So
okay. I tried that and it was even worse.
Yeah, I didn't enjoy it, but I imagine that's something like what the PSP game played like.
Maybe. But in 2007, we got Katamari Damacy Mobile and Beautiful Katamari on the Xbox 360. Now, I think, if I'm not mistaken, people kind of hated the mobile versions, which is surprising because when you think about this, I think that the overly simplistic gameplay that maybe Ryan sees as a negative in mobile form, that'd be like, yeah, you know, don't give me more. Just give me something simple. Maybe I can beat a stage in like 5 minutes or something like that. But then in 2008, we got I Love Katamari, which is another mobile game. In 2009, we got Katamari Forever on the PS3, which I actually own that copy. And this is when they thought that, hey, we have these six-axis controllers, so what if you can make the ball jump, but you have to actually move the controller upward to have it jump?
That was a great idea.
Except it doesn't work half the time. At least it didn't with my controller. And then in 2011, we got Touch My Katamari, which I believe they came out on the Vita, which with that
title.
That's
a terrible name.
Yeah.
It's the best name.
It's the best name.
And I feel like, even though it's not technically a Katamari game, I feel like there's a game that needs an honorable mention here, and that's 2009's Nobi Nobi Boy, created by the same person that made Katamari. Because Nobi Nobi Boy is basically a Katamari game where instead of making a ball, you're making a long boy.
Yeah, I actually played that. Have you guys played Donut County? That came out recently.
No.
Yes. No, I haven't played it, but yes, that is pretty much a Katamari game as well.
Yeah, so Ryan, and for everybody watching and listening, this is actually a fascinating game. So instead of rolling things up, you have a hole on the floor that starts out really small, and then you got to just have things fall. Like, so you have maybe like a fire pit. It falls down there, the hole gets bigger. It gets bigger enough to where you can, you know, swallow people. You can swallow entire houses and things like that. So it takes the same premise, but it's a hole on the floor. And I think that things like that are just simple. They get the job done. As I mentioned, my favorite thing as I played it now was that I wasn't only playing the game. As I was playing it, I'd be listening to a podcast or I'd be watching a YouTube video in the background, just something to keep my mind occupied. And that's not a bad thing. Like when you think about games like The Division 2, people say like, hey, that's a great game to play while you're doing something else or like while you're catching up with a friend or something like that. So knowing that there's so many Katamari Damacy games out there, because there's a couple, even though, surprisingly enough, not a ton on console, there was a lot of mobile stuff, are you tempted, not even for the podcast, but are you curious to see if the formula evolved?
Oh, absolutely. I think I am actually going to go down this rabbit hole or roll up this ball, to so to say, to see exactly where they go with the genre, because I've haven't played any of the other Katamari games, so if they do switch it up, I have no idea, or I wonder if it's just the same formula over and over again and you're just rolling up different things. I'm really intrigued by it, and I guess one day I'll report back and see how many things I've rolled up.
Yeah, that's something where I'd probably look up the game, look up some of the gameplay on YouTube or something to see, do they take things to the next level? Is it worth playing? And if it looked interesting, I'd check it out.
I'm looking at the back of the box of Katamari Forever, and right now, it does seem like it's maybe a little bit more of the usual, even though this one has two players, so that would be interesting. How does... I don't even know how
they
that works.
They only had Versus, I think, right? In,
nope, there
in
was,
this one. In
there Reroll. Was a co-op version. In Reroll, there was a co-op version where one person gets a stick, basically. Like, player one controls left, player two controls right, and you have to work together to roll
wow.
the Katamari.
Oh my god, that oh just sounds goodness. Like getting into a
it's
fight
miserable.
With somebody. Yeah.
I tried it, not recommended.
People talk about Nintendo breaking up relationships. Katamari, man, this is where it's really at. This one says more levels. So right off the bat, not the best example.
All right.
But
you're really selling me.
Katamari Forever does have four graphical filters, including wood, comic, classic, and default. Wait, classic and default.
Oh,
okay.
My God. They got default. I'm buying it.
Oh, yeah, my God. It. Yeah, anything with that default filter.
More than 100 ways to play. More than 100.
Really? What's number 96?
Think of all the ball rolling. Ball, rolling ball to the left, rolling ball to the right. I don't know where I'm going with this, but what is the most memorable moment that you had with this game, whether it be good or bad? Just something that either made you smile, made you react, and yeah, you'll remember it even after this episode is aired.
I think the first time you roll over a person, You never forget that. That sticks with you for the rest of your life, you know? But that when you get to that level where you are rolling up people, that's when I feel like you're like, oh, man, we're really taking things seriously now. It's getting serious here. I think that's where you really recognize the scale of the game, where you feel like it's gotten bigger. So, yeah, that would probably be the most memorable for me.
Yeah, I'm with you there, where once you cross that threshold in the late game where
of
all
murder.
Of a sudden, yeah, pretty much of murder, and you're starting to hit buildings, and all of a sudden you're opening up new areas, because there's no new parts of the game, really. You're just physically able to roll over these hills, and all of a sudden here's a dock, and I would say even the last level is probably my favorite level, just because you're given this ridiculous number that of size that you need to hit in this ridiculous time frame that by the time you get there and the things you're rolling up, it's just so great. You're looking at it like, what is this stupid thing I'm doing? This is really stupid in a very good way. And then it's just fun as you get bigger and bigger. And like I said, you're rolling up clouds, you're rolling up tornadoes, and just seeing how ridiculous this game gets from start to finish. It's just so great and so memorable.
Something that I was surprised by is the game doesn't actually have a lot of stages. It does have a lot of level select things, but when you actually get to the stage, it's like, oh, it's this map that I played a little while before, but they changed a couple of things, which is not necessarily a bad thing. Now, to its credit, what I liked is that often I would go like, oh, okay, so I'm just going to do the same thing. Oh, wait, an entirely new area I didn't even know was there. And just the scale of the map, like there's one stage that is like a beach type area. I think you guys know what I'm talking about. It's also part of the last stage. Like there's like an octopus and things like that. But the fact that you start out that stage super small, but then towards the end, you roll up the entire area that you started in like it's nothing. And then yeah. I was just standing there going like, holy crap. Like think of the scale of the game, even from a developmental standpoint. It's just like, that must have been pretty challenging. How do you have something that starts out so small, but every part is a 3D object that needs to roll up into this ball? It needs to make sense. Even on the Switch, like I know this is a PS2 game, but you guys know that Switch games don't often have the best performance. I did not really have a problem with that. And I played it mostly docked, but I did play it in handheld mode a couple times. Like one of the days, power went out here because it still happens in Puerto Rico. And I'm just like, hey, I'm just going to keep, you know, steamrolling through the game. And surprisingly enough, it works just fine in the handheld mode. So I really, really like that.
I will say, though, it doesn't always hit as far as what you're doing in those stages, because some of those challenge missions that we haven't really talked about are, they're both the high points and the low points of the game as far as I'm concerned, because some of the challenges that it has you do, like just to give an example, because you have to make the different astrology signs. So for Cancer, you need to roll up a bunch of crabs. For Gemini, you need to roll up anything that comes in a twin. And some of them I really, really did not like. I could see why they were trying to do different things, but it was the bear one specifically
I hated.
I really tried so hard to get a good rating on that and try and actually roll up a big bear, but every single time I tried it, I would accidentally roll over a little bear, and all of a sudden,
I lost to a teddy bear.
That's BS.
That's not even fair.
There's nothing about that that feels good.
I thought that was hilarious, though, because when I started it, like I forgot that if you grab the first thing, the stage just ends. And you know there's a bear like right in front of you. So the fact that you start the stage, 4 seconds go by, it's like, hey, you've done it. Like, okay.
It's funny the first time, and it's annoying the 10th time. And eventually I just threw in the towel on that stage, did not like it at all.
Yeah. Well, see, that's what it came down to, and sort of in conjunction with my least favorite and the challenges was really... that the challenges, there was a lack of motivation for me, right? Like when I got that bear like a minute in, and I just took it. I was like, okay, I'm moving on. Like, I don't care. I didn't feel like there was a need to make a bigger star. So I would just do the astrology ones, just get what I got during that time, and when it was done, I was like, all right, I have no motivation to make a bigger one. And that was kind of what happened when you would reach your goal in the normal levels too. I would just be like, all right, I'm kind of done, and I would just kind of lazily roll away until the time ran out. And even on the last level, when I hit the 300 meters, I think I got stuck under a rainbow and literally could not move. I could not move at all.
Really?
I tried, just think about what you said.
I have footage of it.
You got stuck under a rainbow and you couldn't even move, only in Katamari.
Yeah, it just, I hit the exact like 300 meter mark while I was under an island that had a rainbow over it, and it just locked me in. And I tried everything I could, but I was just stuck there. So I was like, okay, great. And that was a little bit of a problem along the way, is there were times where you literally get stuck and you just got shit flying off and you're like, God damn it. Like, this sucks.
I had a moment like that in the Cancer level. We're getting crabs, where I got like stuck behind a banner, and all of a sudden I can't move and my crabs are just flying off. And I was at like 30 crabs, and now I'm down to 2 crabs, and then I just restart the level because I was pissed.
That happened to me in one of the levels that has like a really long down like ramp, but then there's like a little town at the bottom, and then I was big enough to where I could fit in between the stores, but I couldn't get back out. So as I'm trying to get out, I would just see like all the stuff flying out of my ball, which is just weird to say. But yeah, that's something that we forgot to bring up here, is that if you hit a wall or something, it's not like a big deal. Like, honestly, I never lost a stage because of that. But yeah, you do get things flying off of your ball.
If you get jammed, it really sucks. Yeah,
it does. And from a design standpoint, like the camera, they tried it. Like, sometimes when you're big enough, it just kind of like tries to like have a circle around your ball so you can kind of see where you're at. But those are the little things that, yeah, I'm hoping got better in the later games. Although, even though I didn't play a ton of the PS3 one, I remember thinking, hey, it's more Katamari, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but I do think the fact that they made a remaster, even though nowadays like they've remastered even the most random games, right? So I don't think maybe that means a whole of a hell lot, but considering the fact that they actually went through the trouble of doing that, and it works pretty damn well, and it was $30, so you know, it's not full price, you know, $60 or something like that. Do you think they should explore something like that on something like the Switch, or do you think it should just be a matter of like, hey, if you want to play the other ones that are already out there?
Absolutely. As far as I'm concerned, port everything on the Switch. Make every game ever made on the Switch and I'll be happy.
I'd have to see how they handled the rest of the series before I'd be like, oh, this is what they should do for the next one. So I'll have to look more into that. But I mean, yeah, why not have more games? I'd like to see more like virtual console type stuff on the Switch first, but you know, maybe someday.
Yeah, for everybody watching and listening, I think this would not be a bad topic in itself, but just maybe teasing it here a little bit. Ryan and Keith mentioned something that's very common with the Switch, which is we listen to the Giant Bombcast, at least I do a lot, and something that they themselves poke fun at is that they'll say, oh, this is perfect for the Switch, which really could be said about any game, because it's just about the fact that something is portable. Like, think about Mortal Kombat 11. It looks like dog crap on the Switch, but think about the fact that you
can play Mortal Kombat 11 on the toilet, and it's great.
How insane is that, right?
I think nothing gets the bowels flowing like literally ripping somebody's head off and their spine comes with it.
Get Over Here all of a sudden just has a completely different meaning when playing Mortal Kombat 11 on the Switch. But Keith, you mentioned you would love to have stuff ported on the Switch. Is there anything that comes to mind that came out before and you will like that hybrid portable / TV factor added to it?
Well, now that you're putting me on the spot, I don't know if I can think of something.
You brought it up, man.
That's true. My favorite thing for the Switch are these smaller, almost borderline indie games. I don't know if you could call Katamari an indie game because indie games didn't really exist on back when it first came out. But these more bite-sized, I can pick this up for 20 minutes, play it, and then put it down. Those are my favorite experiences that I tend to lean towards on the Switch. Like outside of my play in Katamari, right now I have a deep, deep borderline dark obsession with Stardew Valley because I can pick it up, do 2 days of farming, put it down, carry on, think about Stardew Valley for the next 22 hours of my life, pick it up again, and then play a couple more days. But I really love those bite-sized experiences on the Switch, and they do tend to come in more of the form of the indie games. Like, I don't know if I would say, like, oh, put the Uncharted games on the Switch, because why not? Big cinematic experience. I think those things are better suited on the quote-unquote big boy consoles that are PS4 and the Xbox One. So if you give me more stuff that I can pick up, play for a bit, put down, and do about 10, 20, 30 sessions of that in order to beat it, I am more than happy to do so.
And Ryan, in your case, you brought up the virtual console. So Nintendo does technically have retro games, but I don't think anybody looks at the Nintendo Switch online service and goes, there's a bunch of NES games, most of which I wouldn't even play.
Just give me the Wii U Virtual Console. Just literally just put it there. I don't understand what their issue is.
Did you own a Wii U?
No, but I'm like tempted to get one because I'm like, where the hell is the freaking store? I'm waiting for it. And I want that, and I want Wind Waker HD, and I want Twilight Princess HD. That's what I want. Just give me those. But it's like Wii and Wii U both had Virtual Console. I don't know what the hell they're waiting for.
I think that the Switch is actually going to be very responsible for bringing other games like Katamari Damacy just in modern days because everything is selling on the Switch. Like when you compare the Switch to something like PC, it would be that, hey, you release your game on Steam because there's enough PC gamers out there. And with the sales, naturally, somebody's going to buy your game, right? Like now it's to the point that, hey, if you want your game to have a good amount of fans and have people buy it, you put it to the Switch because if you go to the eShop, there have been games that I've seen for 9 cents, people. 9 cents. There was a game for a penny.
It's insane.
I own a game that is 1 penny, and it broke the top 10 because everybody was buying it. But you also do get, between all of that crap, you do get some good games like Katamari Damacy Reroll.
Are you telling me the game that cost a penny was crap? I don't believe you.
Okay. I actually played it for about 30 minutes.
You cannot tell me, look me in the eye. Yeah, look me in the eye and say you did not get your money's worth for your penny game.
Fractions of a penny. Oh, man. But what would you guys say is the legacy that a game like Katamari Damacy Reroll left, or the original one? Because we're thinking about it in hindsight, right? Like it's 2019, but I have no doubt that because this game maybe did okay, like apparently it didn't sell all that great, but it had a passionate fan base that maybe it inspired other weird games. Like you mentioned Nobi Nobi Boy. Like what did this game leave back from 2004 all the way to now?
I think it gave developers and people with an idea the kind of the platform to be able to go out there and be this weird thing. Because when we talk about the other games that were huge in 2004, and I can take nothing away from any of them that, except maybe Tony Hawk Underground 2, because it's not a very good game, but all of those games kind of followed a formula where it's a kind of gray shooter, or everything had to be an action game. Everything was moving forward. It was a big, large-scale game. But then at that same time, Katamari came along and was like, you know what? You can just have fun. If you have an idea, you can go out and do it. And you see a lot of that these days with indie games, with smaller games in development. And really, Katamari, I would say, is one of the forefathers of that movement. And you don't have to be like everything else. If you have an idea, you can go have fun with it and just do something different. Not everything needs to be this giant blockbuster game that sells millions of copies. It's okay to have something on a larger scale and is just around to be fun.
Absolutely, absolutely. Ryan, anything you want to add to that?
I just think it kind of paved the way for, you know, just unique ideas that could be accepted. And I think it was definitely a big inspiration for a lot of the smaller indie games that we see on Steam and on the Nintendo Switch store, as just you take this cool little concept and turn it into a really charming game.
Yeah, I think that for me and any other game that's like this is similar. When we made the transition from 2D to 3D, I feel like developers were like, well, now it's all about the real dark and gritty stuff. But then here comes something like Katamari Damacy, which reminds you, hey, we can use 3D for creative stuff that is not necessarily realism-based. If anything, we actually take it all the way back and try something else with it. So I think it, much like you guys mentioned, it's all about challenging the developers to think outside of the box, to try something else. And maybe, yeah, in 2004, it didn't have the market because most of the people were not looking for that. Like the fact of the matter that Keith said, hey, I've known about this game, but you look at the menu of other games that came out in 2004, and honestly, can you blame somebody for not playing Katamari Damacy? No, because we were kids. It's not like we had full-time jobs there to go like, hey, I got to pick.
Much more likely to thrive in today's market, right? Like,
can you imagine a Keith that only played Katamari and not Snake Eater, Ryan?
Yeah. Or, I mean, think
I
of
can't
something
imagine that
like that game Getting Over It, right? On Steam.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
These are the types of games. It's like, oh, you know, it's just a little concept game, but it's like, yeah, this is it's a great time to re-release it because this is the era. It was ahead of its time, I guess you could say. It's just like, you know, maybe it wasn't enough for people to buy in when it was a $50-$60 release, but when you can kind of price point it at a smaller game, it's really a good time for it.
Agreed. So everybody watching and listening, please let us know what do you guys think about Katamari Damacy. I have no doubt that most people have not played it, but you've always been contemplating it. You've always been thinking about it. We had somebody on the Discord say like, hey, I've always heard about it, but I'm afraid. So we do have,
what Discord would that be?
That would be acastofthepast.com/discord, all lowercase. Discord really is the best place where you guys can just catch up with us. You know, sometimes we'll shoot the breeze, or you guys and gals can leave suggestions, and then we can actually react to that. Like some of these episodes have been directly inspired by some of the Discord conversations, so you can definitely do that or send us an email to acastofthepast@gmail.com. I feel like we have an interesting conversation there when you brought up, Keith, talking about remasters. I see those as a good thing because a lot of people just haven't played a lot of stuff. Like, we grew up playing GameCube, and we've had a lot of people. I have friends that are like, I never owned a GameCube. So just think about all of the games they never experienced that now, if they came out remastered on the Switch, not only would they look better and perform better, but people that never played them back in the day will be able to experience them. So for everybody that's enjoying the episode, please let us know. Send us a tweet, a cast of the past. And what are some of the games that you think should be remastered? And maybe we do a shorter episode about that, because I feel like that is a really good conversation to have. And Mr. McNulty, if people want to check out the archives, what's available right now?
Well, we got plenty of episodes you can check out either via your favorite podcast app or over on youtube.com/acasttothepast. And those episodes include looking at another PS2 game, Grand Theft Auto 3. That was a game that was a big part of all of our childhoods, I'd say, even if we maybe shouldn't have been playing it when we were younger. But we went back and took a look at GTA 3 and how does it stack up today. We also took a look back at one of Juan and I's favorite movies, Office Space, pretty recently, so that is available to check out. Great cult classic movie. And then looking at the PlayStation 1 N64 era, we took a look back at one of the most influential sports games, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2.
That's the good Tony Hawk 2, not Tony Hawk Underground 2.
Oh boy. I gotta play that. Even though I own Tony Hawk's Underground 2, I played very little of it, but if anybody that is listening, you enjoy the show, the best, the absolute best way you can support us is honestly by leaving a review on your podcast platform of choice. There's a ton of podcasts out there. We know that retro gaming is cool. That's what the cool kids enjoy nowadays, right? They don't talk about the new games. They talk about them 80s. They talk about them Retrons, the Polymega. There's a lot of good stuff there. So yeah, just leave a review. We will definitely read it out loud, as it is the least that we can do. You can also support us directly by going to acasttothepast.com/Ko-fi. That is K-O-F-I. It's just a place that you can almost buy us a cup of coffee. Let's us know you guys and gals care about the show. We give you a shout out. Think it's all good, right? So up until next
medium,
time, folks.
Raspberry flavor shot. Ooh. With sweet.
Ooh.
And low and
ooh,
almond
you're
milk,
fancy.
Please.
You're a fancy lady, aren't you?
Yeah. In my case, I like some coffee espresso with a little bit of heavy cream. I like mine extra creamy, right?
I just like a black coffee.
Well, the thing is, your definition of black coffee to me is like water. Like Puerto Rico art.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
You guys are monsters when it comes to coffee, and it's like tasting basically toilet.
Whoa. Wow.
Okay. I take offense to that, but we'll talk about that in another episode of A Cast. I'm doing the outro before this goes on. A Cast to the
Past.
Keith? Tread
toilet
lightly, my
water,
friend.
Coffee.
Apologize.
I will not apologize.